Silver's, but Damien's arms now had them pinned so we couldn't reach under them toward each other. Most of my lovers were side sleepers or had trained up to sleep on their side after a few months. Here was a new one to try to train all over again to sleep on his side so we could spoon while we slept. I freed a hand from the covers and laid it across his bare chest. He moved under my touch, but it was like he was as afraid to touch me now as when he first came into the room.
At least put a hand or arm across her, Damien.
I thought you might not want me to touch her, my king.
If I did not want you to touch her, I would not have insisted you sleep with us today.
I suppose not. And Damien touched my hand where it lay on his chest.
You have to move this arm, Damien, Nathaniel said.
Why? He asked.
Because you've trapped the covers, and I can't reach across you and touch Anita without getting my arm out of the covers. I like under the covers when I sleep.
Damien sighed but turned onto his stomach with one arm tucked up under his body and the other reaching over my side, but that put him touching Jean-Claude's bare side, and Damien pulled back.
I gave you my word of honor when you first came here that I would never force myself on you. I have never given you a reason to doubt my word.
You have been a man of your word, Jean-Claude.
Then put your arm over ma petite and touch me or not. But do not flinch every time you touch me accidentally, or none of us will sleep tonight.
I'm not comfortable yet, Nathaniel said.
Then get comfortable, our pussycat.
Nathaniel slid an arm across Damien's back until he could touch me, and lightly Jean-Claude if he stretched.
Damien, scoot closer to Anita so we can all cuddle.
Damien drew a breath as if to argue, then seemed to finally give in to the whole idea. He didn't say anything, but his arm went over me and across Jean-Claude, and then Damien snuggled in against me, pinning Jean-Claude's arm between us. Nathaniel snuggled in tighter on Damien's other side, throwing a leg across the other man's legs, which pressed his body tight against Jean-Claude's arm and Damien's side. Nathaniel stretched out his arm across Damien's back, and finally must have put part of his shoulder on the other man's back, because he could reach not only me, but enough of Jean-Claude so he was able to wrap his hand over the other vampire's side and hold him too. Jean-Claude raised his arm and put it across Damien's back and Nathaniel's side. Now Damien could press himself closer against me. He turned a little bit on his side so that his arm and a bit of hip were propped up on me, which meant that Nathaniel pretty much rolled partially on top of him, but he didn't protest this time. It wasn't perfect with him on his stomach and me on my side, but as I let my hand and then my arm slide over his back, some tension in me eased. I was able to stroke Damien's back at the same time that I could caress Nathaniel's side. We were all so intertwined. It was always good to have Jean-Claude pressed in at my back, but there was a goodness to Damien's and Nathaniel's skin touching mine that wasn't about love, but almost about need, as if I'd been needing to touch both of them together for a very long time. Was this how Jean-Claude felt about sleeping with me and Richard? If so, he'd been missing it lately. I'd ask Jean-Claude later, but right now I suddenly just wanted to sleep. I heard Damien's breath go out with a long, almost contented sigh. I buried my face against his red hair and found it still damp near his scalp from the shower and smelling like clean herbs. I kept petting his back and playing along Nathaniel's side with the same gesture. Jean-Claude held us all, and somewhere in the warmth of skin, silk sheets, and clean, damp hair, we all fell asleep. We weren't thinking of nightmares, but that was okay, because the nightmares were thinking of us. Chapter 6. I was standing on a narrow cobblestone street. I'd have called it an alley, except cars were parked on it. It was after dark, but the streetlights kept it from being truly dark, so the light was electric-kissed and softened in a fine, misting rain that made halos around the lights, as if angels had been beheaded and put up on poles as a warning. Even in the dream, I thought, that's a weird thought, and thinking it made me realize it was a dream. There was something lying in the shadows against the far wall, lost in a pool of blackness that all the light seemed to miss, as if the light were afraid of it or didn't want anyone to see. I went forward because I had to somehow, and as I reached out toward that darker shadow, my hand was too big, too pale. A man's hand. Then it was mine, and then it wasn't. Like a television channel that isn't steady so that it wavers between one show and another, until the dual images pile on top of each other and until you can't tell what you're watching anymore. He got close enough to the shadowed heap because it was a pile of something against the wall. There was a pool of dark water near it, was the first thought, but as the liquid crept around our shoes, my jogging shoes and his dress boots, we knew it wasn't water. We stood in a growing pool of blood, and the shadow lifted like a magician taking away a cloth, and the body lay crumpled on its side. One hand drawn up tight against its side, as if it had tried to hold in some of what was spilling out of its stomach. Something had ripped it open. Her. Ripped her open because the staring face was female. She looked young, maybe even pretty, but it was hard to tell now. The rain beaded on her skin like someone was sprinkling her. The head began to slide as if she were going to shake her head, but it was just her dead muscles giving up on holding her head in place. Her throat had been torn open like her stomach, so that the soft light glistened on her spine in among all that red meat. I thought I saw teeth marks in her flesh, but I couldn't be sure, because there were sirens in the night, but they didn't sound right. The man in my head turned to run, and the corpse grabbed my ankle. I woke sitting upright in the dark, my breathing ragged and panicked. Except it was as if I woke up twice, no, three times, and was sitting beside myself as we all fought not to scream. I managed to whisper, "Damien, Nathaniel, it's Anita." Damien said, "Oh, God. You saw, right? You saw the body." "Yes." The bed felt soaked with sweat as if we'd been trapped in nightmares for too long.
"That didn't feel like any dream I've ever had," Nathaniel said,
and he had reached through the dark so that we were holding hands across Damien. Jean-Claude turned on the bedside light from where he was standing beside the bed, and the moment he did, I gasped, because it wasn't sweat that had soaked the bed. It was blood. Damien and Nathaniel were covered in it. I gasped. Damien cried out, holding his hands in front of him. Guards came through the door without knocking, guns naked in their hands. They were both tall, in good shape, like most of the guards. They aimed at Damien because you can't shoot your king, or his queen, or one of their main lovers. "No, don't hurt him!" I called out. Jean-Claude said,
"It is Damien who is hurt, I think."
My blue nightie was purple with blood. Half of Nathaniel's face and upper body were stained red, and his shorts were black with it. But Damien's pale skin was dotted and splotched with blood like cast-off from some terrible crime. His red pajama bottoms were black from waist to ankle, the cloth wrapped tight to his legs with so much blood.
"What have I done?"
he asked, hands held out toward us.
"Nothing, mon ami. It is you who have bled, not ma petite or Nathaniel."
"Who hurt him?" I asked.
"No one. I believe it is sweat."
The guards, one brunette and the other with paler brown hair, aimed their guns at the floor but weren't leaving. I couldn't even blame them. The bed looked like a serial killer crime scene except everyone was alive. Damien began to check himself for wounds. Nathaniel and I helped, touching his back in places he couldn't reach, but once we wiped the blood away, his skin seemed whole.
"I woke to ma petite struggling in the dark with a dream, but when I went to wake her, I realized all of you were dreaming. Damien began to sweat, and though we have some light color to our sweat, this was..."
He gestured at the ruined bed.
"I have never seen this before."
"What's happening to me?"
Damien asked, and it was almost a yell, but the look on his blood-spattered face was a plea.
"I do not know,"
Jean-Claude said. And I got a quick flash of how worried he was before he shut it down and pushed me further from his emotions. But that was okay because I was feeling enough from Damien. Nathaniel and I were both fighting to separate his terror from our unease. I wasn't afraid. Not yet. I'd save being afraid for when there was something real in front of me to fight. Or that was what I told myself as I calmed the pulse that was trying to gallop out of my neck, as if I were choking on my own heart. God, Damien was so afraid.
Nathaniel looked at me from the other side of our vampire third, and he was as calm as I was. We were both working through our fears. No, we were both working through Damien's fears.
First, the three of you need to clean up. I will have the bed stripped and see what can be done with it.
How come you're not bloody?
The brunette guard asked.
Because I noticed it starting and got out of the way.
Why didn't you wake us? I asked.
I felt it was important to see it play out.
Thanks a lot, I said, as I started crawling across the bloody sheets toward the edge of the bed. Nathaniel was crawling to join me.
Ma petite, you are forgetting someone.
I stopped and looked where he was nodding. Damien was still staring at himself as if he were trapped in another nightmare, but this one he couldn't wake up from. I wanted to help him, but if I was choking on his fear from here, touching him would make it worse. I said out loud, if I touch him, I'm not sure I can stop his fear from overwhelming me.
Try. Just try, ma petite.
I swallowed hard and so didn't want to, but Jean-Claude was right, I had to try. I crawled back to Damien and reached out to him. He jerked back from me.
No, don't, I'm unclean. Can't you see that there's something wrong with me?
Nathaniel had crawled back with me.
You aren't unclean, Damien.
We aren't vampires. We won't catch anything, I said as I reached out slowly the way you approach a skittish animal.
Anita!
Let me try, Damien.
Let us both try, Nathaniel said.
His eyes looked so green in their mask of blood, like a macabre Christmas image, but he sat still and let me touch his arm. The moment I did, my pulse slowed, and so did his. It was like touching him calmed us both. Nathaniel touched his other arm, and it was like a circuit completed. We'd plugged in the last thing, and with that sense of completion, there was a peacefulness that I hadn't thought possible while we were sitting in the blood-soaked sheets. I looked back over my shoulder at Jean-Claude.
How did you know that would happen?
I did not know for certain. But in the past, Damien has been your calm center in the midst of emotion. I thought it might work both ways.
Damien took my hand in his, and the last of the fear receded like the sea pulling back from the shore. He blinked at me.
Thank you. Thank you both.
What now?
I asked Jean-Claude. Now you need a shower. For such as this, the bathtub attached to this room will not do.
I mean after the shower.
Come back here, and if the bed is fit to sleep on, we will try. If not, we will use one of the guest rooms for the rest of the day.
I don't want to sleep again, Damien said. Did you see the nightmare I shared with Anita and Nathaniel?
No,
he said.
Then you don't understand.
I can see the aftermath of the dream, Damien. I understand that it was terrible enough to make you sweat blood.
I started pulling Damien by the hand toward the edge of the bed. Nathaniel helped me tug him toward the edge of the bed. Let's clean up and then we'll talk about what comes next, I said. Jean-Claude took pictures of us with his cell phone before we left to shower.
If we find a doctor to consult, we can show them pictures of this, he'd said,
and it made sense, though it felt like being part of a crime scene evidence collection. Jean-Claude sent with us the two guards who had come through the door.
They are not to be left alone, were his orders.
What does that mean? I asked as I stood there holding Damien's hand.
It means we do not know what is happening, ma petite, and it would be beyond careless of me to send you and Nathaniel off alone with Damien without other eyes to watch over you.
You think I'm a danger to Anita?
Are you not ravenous?
Hungry? No.
After losing so much blood, mon ami, you should be.
Damien nodded. I learned to control all my needs centuries ago, Jean-Claude. She who made me used every need and want against us. It was better to feel nothing, want nothing, than to give her that opening.
I have known very few vampires that could control their bloodlust to that degree.
She would deny us blood until we felt crazed with the need for it. She liked letting the starved vampires free on prisoners. It was... Damien shook his head. I both witnessed such feedings and partook in them. I thought I had control of that part of me until a few years back when I lost myself and attacked those people.
I squeezed his hand. That was my fault.
I didn't know I was your master, and if I did, I didn't understand what it meant.
Your power being withdrawn from me drove me mad, yes, but it wasn't your teeth, your strength, that slaughtered that poor couple.
I thought you did not remember what you had done, mon ami,
Jean-Claude said.
I still don't, but I believe you when you said I did it.
He raised my hand back up, waving our clasped hands.
With Anita's hand in mine, I can control myself, and not be the beast that she who made me could reduce me to.
He raised his other hand where Nathaniel was still holding on.
With both their hands in mine, I can be more than I was.
If I truly believed you dangerous, I would not allow them to leave this room with you. But I would like help to be there if something else unusual happens, that is all.
I wasn't sure I believed it either, but I took it at face value. Though I did ask, wait, does not taking their eyes off us mean they have to watch us in the shower, or can they just stand outside the door? The guard with pale brown hair said,
We don't donate blood or anything else, we just do our jobs.
I was not volunteering you as food, Jean-Claude said.
If they can wait outside the door, then it's not a problem, I said.
I'd prefer a closer eye,
Jean-Claude said. They can wait outside the showers, we'll be fine, I said, and we led Damien to the door where one guard opened it and the other followed behind. I was calm enough now that I wasn't happy that Jean-Claude was casually encouraging strange men to watch me shower. Yes, they were shapeshifters, which meant nudity didn't mean much to them, but I wasn't a shapeshifter, and I didn't want two new guards that I didn't know at all watching us in the showers. I wouldn't argue with Jean-Claude anymore, but once we were out of his sight, then I'd argue with the two guards he was sending with us. I had a much better chance of winning the argument with them than with Jean-Claude.
Chapter 7 I'd managed to ask the two guards' names by the time we were walking past the group showers. Brunette was Barry. Barry the Brunette. And Pale Brown was Harris. I wasn't sure if it was his first or last name, and I didn't ask. They both felt like a lot of the new guards, interchangeable, as if someone had hired them from the same pool of tall, athletic, younger men, mostly white, though not all, and unfinished in a way that the guards that Raphael's people hired weren't. In an effort to get a greater variety of were-animals into our personal guards, we'd let other groups besides the were-rats offer up candidates for guard duty. So far, no one was better than Raphael's rats, and some of the were-hyenas, and the harlequin. They were the personal guards of the old queen of vampires, and they were the best of the best. But then they'd had hundreds, sometimes thousands of years to practice their skills. It was hard to compete with that when you were under 30, like most of the new guards. But still, Barry and Harris didn't fill me with the same confidence that some of our longer-term guards did. I had no intention of us using the group showers. We'd use the shower in the room that Nathaniel and I shared with Micah. We could hear the noise from the group showers down the hallway. Men laughing, calling out to each other, and just the energy of so many athletic and professionally competent violent men contained in good-natured rivalry, because that was always an underlying energy to the guards. The type of men who are good at the job description are always speculating who's the best, the fastest, the strongest, who will win. Add that they were all were-animals and the testosterone level could be enough to drown in. Normally I was okay with that, but not today. I felt Nathaniel flinch on the other side of Damien, and that was about how I felt too. It was like it was too much energy to deal with while all three of us were still raw from the dream. We were almost past the showers when I realized the noise inside was a lot less. It was reduced from a rollicking noise fest to almost silence. It was like being in the forest when the birds and crickets stop singing. You know something's wrong. I had left the bedroom with only my Browning in my hand, because lingerie sucks for places to put weapons. I fought the urge to point the gun at the door, and the fact that the two guards with us didn't react to the sudden silence made me take points away from them. The guards inside the shower spilled out of the doorway in front of us, some low to the ground on their knees, others standing. Some of them took cover around the edge of the doorway, and others just filled the hallway, weapons in hand and mostly nude. There was a moment when you almost felt them hesitate as they saw us, and then the weapons steadied, all pointing at Damien. It was interesting that they just assumed Nathaniel and I were innocent of whatever carnage had happened. "Ease down,"
I said. They all ignored me.
Not good.
It's Damien's blood, not mine.
That made some of them glance at each other as if looking for a clue, but most of them stayed with their guns nice and steady. One gun moved a fraction and was pointing at me.
How could I tell?
When you've had enough guns pointed directly at you, you get very sensitive to that kind of thing.
It was Ricky again. He'd used up all my goodwill at Danse Macabre last time I saw him.
Unless you're going to shoot me, move the gun off me, now, I said in a low voice.
If that's Damien's blood, then you're more dangerous than he is.
His voice was as steady as his hand, but there was an edge of anger to that calm.
One of the other guards, naked in the doorway, said,
Ricky, are you pointing your gun at one of our main protectees?
Harris moved in front of us to act as a meat shield. Barry had his gun out, but neither of them wanted to draw down on this many of their fellow guards. I sympathized, but I also knew I'd be reporting their lack of enthusiasm for protecting my life. Since that was one of their main jobs, it wasn't reassuring. I called out over the broad shoulders of my meat shield.
Ricky, the last time I saw you, Echo was telling you you'd fucked up, and now you've pointed a gun at me. You just don't want this job, do you?
You show up covered in blood and tell us it doesn't belong to the vampire. What are we supposed to think?
He asked. He even sounded like he might believe it. Maybe I had scared him more the first time we met than I realized. Sometimes once you've used basically vampire powers on someone and let them keep the memory of what you did, they never get over it. I know I've held grudges against real vampires for shit like that. I heard other sounds and knew the guards were closing around Ricky. They'd report what he'd done because the only thing that hurts a bodyguard's reputation worse than having a client die on their watch is one of their own security specialists killing the client.
You all smelled the fresh blood, but we were right on top of you before you reacted to it.
Yeah.
It was Bobby Lee wearing a pair of boxers and holding a Smith & Wesson M&P loose in his hands. His body was lean and muscled in that way that long-distance runners get sometimes. There was almost no body fat to him, so he looked impressively cut, each muscle showing under his skin. But it was a little too lean, and I wondered if he was eating enough. Bobby Lee was one of the men most likely to be sent out of country on mercenary work for the were-rats that had nothing to do with us, and everyone deals with the stress of that kind of work differently. His short blonde hair was still on end, but his gold-framed glasses showed that his medium brown eyes were steady. He was always steady, was Bobby Lee, but I'd be talking to some of the other guards I trusted to see if he was doing okay. I didn't make Damien bleed. I just woke up in the mess with him.
Well, darling, if you didn't hurt him, who did? Because this is too much blood to be losing.
He always had a slight southern accent, and every woman was darling. When he was under stress, the accent got thicker, and he started adding honey chow and sugar.
It's a long story, Bobby Lee, but if you want to help these two walk us to Nathaniel and Micah's room so we can use the shower, I'll fill you in.
Happy to help, ma'am. Can you give me a minute to get dressed and rearmed?
Sure.
He smiled, and then his brown eyes swam to black. His rat eyes in his human face.
Just so you know, darling, the blood doesn't smell like vampire. It smells warmer than that.
I felt the jump of energy through the guards as their beasts flashed through them. I was suddenly looking at amber, orange, red, brown, and more black. Wolf, lion, hyena, rat. I fought with everything I had not to shiver or show any sign of fear. Damien had gone so still that if I hadn't been holding his hand, I wouldn't have been able to feel him there at all. I felt more from Nathaniel on the other side of him, even though we were both holding hands with the vampire and not each other. The guard's energy whispered through me, and I could see my own beasts inside me the way you see dreams in your head. My wolf, my lion, my hyena, my leopard all looked up, and their energy ran over my skin and spilled out toward the energy in the hallway. I had enough control now to make sure that was all that happened. And I was happy for that as I looked at them all, because smelling like fresh blood around a bunch of were-animals isn't always good for your health, even if you had your own monster to throw back at theirs.
And just like that, we don't know whether to fight you, fuck you, or eat you,
Ricky again, though he was unarmed now with other guards on either side of him in a way that they usually reserved for bad guys.
2 out of 3 isn't happening, Ricky boy, but that first one, maybe we should meet on the practice mats and see what happens.
And when I start to win, you'll use your magic and cheat.
If we meet on the mats, I promise not to eat your anger or raise the ardure.
You'd fight me fair?
You're 6 feet plus to my 5'3", so I'm not sure there's any way to have a fair fight between us. But if you mean I won't use any preternatural abilities that we don't both have, then yeah, a fair fight.
Yeah, I'd like that a lot.
He gave me a look that held something close to hate. I'd humiliated him the first time we met. Yes, he'd started it, but I might have taken it too far. And if I did, then his reaction to me today was my fault. I was supposed to be his boss, so I'd tried to fix it the only way I knew how, by letting him win. He was a big guy, and he was training with our guards, so I didn't expect to win. And because I didn't expect it, losing in a match with someone to call it before he hurt me didn't risk any ego on my part, and it might restore some of his. But this was the last chance for Ricky. If he ever stepped out of line after I saw him on the practice mats, either he was gone, or he'd keep pushing until he got dead, and that was about as gone as you could get. I felt vaguely like it was my fault for messing with him the first time, so I'd literally go to the mats with him. Let me get this thing with Damien fixed and we'll set something up, I said.
Tomorrow?
Ricky asked.
I don't think my problem will fix that soon,
Damien said, and he managed to sound disdainful and sad at the same time. No, Nathaniel said. It won't be tomorrow. Ricky frowned at us, and just like the first time I'd met him, I wasn't sure he was the brightest bulb in the box. It was one of the things that had contributed to our misunderstanding. I had overestimated how much he understood of what I was saying until it was too late. It may be a few days, I said, but you'll get your chance on the practice mat with me.
You promise?
He said. I already did. Ricky nodded, and for the first time I saw something on his face besides fear or hatred. I wasn't sure that his being eager to beat the shit out of me was really an improvement, but some days, you take what you can get. Chapter 8. Bobby Lee came back out minutes later with his still wet hair combed in place. He was all in black, which was the unofficial uniform for the guards. Fully armed, he had on a black t-shirt, black tactical pants, a good leather belt with a black-on-black buckle, and matching boots laced up so that his pants were inside the tops of them. Most ex-military I knew wore their pants that way. Hell, I had all the same clothes and had started wearing them when I was out in the field serving a warrant of execution with the Marshals Service. I'd never been in the military, but a lot of my friends had been, and a lot of the police I worked with had been, and I was always willing to learn from other people's experience. I still wore jeans a lot, but more and more, tactical pants were becoming my go-to. It was partially the extra pockets. So damn useful. How you doing, Bobby Lee? I asked. He gave me a look, and then he smiled. The smile lines around his eyes seemed deeper, but his brown eyes shone with humor. Darling, you are covered in blood, holding a naked gun in one hand and a blood-soaked vampire in the other one, with your blood-covered boyfriend holding the vampire's other hand. Shouldn't I be asking you that question? He had a point. I laughed. I'll stop throwing stones at your glass house until I get mine in order. I get it. His smile widened into a grin. Thank you, sugar. Now let's get you to some showers that aren't full of shapeshifters that think all this fresh blood makes you smell good enough to eat. I frowned at him, studying his face. Bobby Lee never flirted with me, so either the double entendre was unintentional, or it was just a statement of fact. Looking into his eyes, I thought the latter. I've been around most of the guards with blood on me, or they've been around each other when they've been hurt in practice. Why is this more of a temptation?
Let's walk and talk,
he said, still smiling, but now it didn't reach his eyes. They looked tired suddenly, as if he couldn't hide it all. I narrowed my eyes a little, but said, okay. I trusted him to explain later when we had more privacy. He looked at Harris and Barry and nodded toward the hallway.
You need to report back to Claudia. She's got another assignment for you. Hey, we didn't do nothing wrong,
Barry the brunette said.
Nobody said you did.
But something in the way that Bobby Lee looked at the other man made Barry flinch. Harris touched his arm.
Come on, Barry. We've been ordered to report to Claudia, so that's what we do.
Barry glared at Bobby Lee, then visibly swallowed his anger and said,
Fine. Let's go report to the Amazon.
That is not Claudia's name, I said.
Barry looked at me and he did that up and down look, not sexual, but disdainful. I was a short woman in a bloody nightie holding another man's hand. Even the gun in my hand couldn't offset the rest, at least not for Barry.
I know her name.
Then use it, I said.
He sneered at me, raised his lip like he didn't care if I saw.
Fine. We'll go report to Claudia for reassignment.
Ma'am. Or sir, I said.
What?
He asked, frowning. Say yes, ma'am, or yes, sir, when you address me, Barry.
I don't...
Harris said,
yes, ma'am, we will do so in the future. Come on, Barry, we gotta go.
Barry still looked sullen, but Harris looked worried. It made me think better of Harris. He was smart enough to be afraid for his future here. Barry wasn't. Barry needed to go, along with Ricky.
You all the guard we need, Bobby Lee? I asked.
Compared to those two, I am an improvement.
I hear that, I said.
But no, I was going to include Kazim.
As if his name had conjured him, Kazim spilled around the corner of the door behind us like liquid made solid and alive. He was one of the most graceful men I'd ever seen when he moved. I knew and dated dancers, dancers who were were-animals, but none of them made me think of water poured from long-necked, wide-mouthed jars to spill and shape itself to everything, except for Kazim. He looked tall, dark, and slender until he stood beside Bobby Lee, and suddenly the illusion of height disappeared because you had Bobby Lee's height to compare to. Kazim was 5'6", or a smidgen under. He and I had been paired together on the practice mat more than once because of our sizes. Like I'd told Ricky, size matters in a fight, especially if it's a fight where we can't maim, cripple, or kill our opponent quickly. When you're equally well-trained, the only hope a smaller person has is to end the fight as quickly and violently as possible. The rules that would keep Ricky from hurting me too badly in combat training also kept me from hurting him badly, and in a long fight, the bigger person usually wins.
Kazim, I said and smiled.
He gave that faint smile of his, almost lost in the blackness of his facial hair and dark skin. His hair was the exact same color as his beard and mustache, and his skin so dark, even his eyes were a brown so dark they looked black most of the time. He was all monotone so that your eyes had trouble seeing details, and he always dressed in black, which contributed to the lack of contrasts in his coloring. There were sections of the world where he would have vanished into any crowd, the perfect spy, perfect assassin, because they wouldn't remember him. Here in St. Louis he stood out, because he was too far from the desert sands and the spired cities of his original homeland.
Anita, Nathaniel, Damien.
Almost any other guard would have at least remarked on Damien and me covered in blood, but he wouldn't ask. He was one of the least talkative people I'd ever been around, but his dark eyes seemed to see everything. He was dressed in flowing robes with loose, soft trousers underneath. It wasn't what he wore on duty, and he must have noticed me noticing because he said,
I can change if you wish.
One glance and you knew I was taking in the robes? He gave a small nod. As long as you can move and fight as well in the robes as you can in regular guard gear, I'm fine with it.
I fight well, no matter what I am wearing.
I grinned. Of that I have no doubt. He flashed me a smile almost big enough to be called a grin, one that left his dark eyes shining. Damien drew me in against his side.
Please, Anita, I need to get clean.
I looked up into those green eyes and saw the pain so raw. Nathaniel and me touching him was helping him control it, but it was like water tension, and once that tension broke, the emotion was going to pour out. We needed to get cleaned up before that. Sorry, Damien, you're right. We'll use the shower in our room. I meant the room I shared with Micah and Nathaniel. It was funny that even after dating Jean-Claude for 7 years, I still thought of his bedroom as his, but I thought of bedrooms with the other two men as ours. I wasn't sure why, but I knew it was true.
There's a shower in my room, Damien said.
Cardinal will be in there, I said.
But she won't care, Anita. It's after dawn, so she'll be dead to the world. She will so care when she wakes up for the night, I said. Bobby Lee said, taking you three near Cardinal right now like this is against my job parameters.
Cardinal is unstable and dangerous,
Kazim said, and for him to say anything at all let me know things were worse with Cardinal than even I knew.
No, she won't care when she wakes up because when I told her I was sleeping with you and Jean-Claude last night, she left me.
What? I said. You didn't tell us that, Nathaniel said.
She said that if I wanted to sleep with other people, she couldn't be with me anymore. That I had to choose.
Did you tell her you were just sleeping? Not having sex? Nathaniel asked.
Yes.
What did she say to that? I asked, because I had to ask.
She didn't believe me. And she told me that if I was buggering Jean-Claude and Nathaniel and fucking you, she hated me and never wanted to speak to me again.
That's not what she said. I mean, not really.
No, but it's the cleaned-up version.
If that's the cleaned-up version, I'm okay not hearing the other, I said. Are you sure Cardinal won't be in the room? Bobby Lee asked.
Even if she is, it's daylight. She'll be passed out.
You aren't, Kazim said.
Neither is Jean-Claude, Damien said.
Yes, just you and he, of all the vampires, are awake now,
Kazim said, and he was looking at Damien now as if trying to see something in him that he'd missed. I jiggled Damien's hand in mine and said, he's with me, Kazim.
Of course, he said.
Stop sizing him up for the kill, then. He blinked and looked very steadily at me with his dark eyes.
You are very observant.
Not as observant as you are. He gave a small, self-deprecating smile.
I have had more practice at it.
Yeah, a few centuries more, I said.
By the grace of my vampire master, I have lived long past my expected time.
If we keep talking, we're going to use up all our time, Bobby Lee said. Let's get moving.
It was unusually abrupt for him, but something about the way he gripped his AR and stood there in all his gear made me not argue with him. Whatever had happened on his last out-of-town assignment had been bad, because I'd never seen Bobby Lee like this when he got home. Let's move, I said. Bobby Lee took point, leading the way. Kazim took rear guard. Damien, Nathaniel, and I stayed in the middle where we belonged. I had my gun in my hand, but in that moment it didn't matter. Armed or unarmed, I was their protectee, and that was that. With Bobby Lee this high-strung, my best move was to let him do his job. Besides, I only had one gun. He had several. I could feel tension starting in Damien again. It telegraphed through his hand into mine. You okay?
If Cardinal is dead to the world in our bed, then we still have a chance. But if she's not in there, then it's over. I can't live like this anymore.
Nathaniel touched his head against the other man's shoulder lightly as they moved.
I'm sorry, Damien.
We were still holding hands, but somehow I felt like I needed to touch him more, so I put my arm around his waist. It took a second for all of us to adjust our walking together, but we managed. I'm sorry too, Damien.
So am I, he said,
and we followed Bobby Lee's overly armored and armed back down the hallway. Bodyguards are great at saving your life, but they can't help at all when someone is trying to break your heart. Chapter 9. Damien had wanted to know if he was a suddenly single vampire or if he still had a relationship. He felt like he needed to know, so we went to his room first. If Cardinal was in the bed, we'd go back to Nathaniel's in my room for showers. The five of us stood in Damien's room. A bedside lamp shone beside a perfectly made-up bed. It had a flowered coverlet and lace draped from the bedframe. There was a large rug on the floor that was covered in huge daisy-like flowers. There were pictures on the walls of flowers in vases, flower-filled meadows, a small girl holding flowers. In all that flower-filled, overly feminine room, there was no sign of Cardinal. I knew her coffin was in one of the coffin rooms, so there was no hidden place for her here. She was either in the bed, under the bed, or sleeping in the bathtub. No vampire I knew willingly slept in a tub, so...
I'm sorry, Damien.
It seemed so inadequate, but it was all I could think to say. Nathaniel hugged him, and Damien hugged him back as if he wasn't really seeing him. Bobby Lee and Kazim just stood there, taking up positions in the room so they could watch the door. They were as empty as they could make themselves, taking themselves away from the emotion of the moment. Normally, Bobby Lee was more helpful, but I think he was full up on his own emotional shit. No energy left for anyone else. I expected Damien to break down, or scream, or go look for her, but he didn't do any of that. Instead, he said,
"I hate what she did to my room. I hate the bedspread."
He stalked into the room and dragged it off the bed and threw it on the floor.
"I hate these paintings."
He grabbed the one that looked like a bad imitation of Van Gogh's sunflowers and threw it across the room like a frisbee.
"I hate these rugs."
He picked the biggest one up and pulled it behind him like the train on some impossible formal gown. He opened the door, shoved it through, and brought the bedspread out to join it. The sheets underneath were pink, but I refrained from saying anything that might add to the emotion of the moment. He slammed the door behind him and ranted,
"I hated the colors she chose, the mess she made of my closet, and how her clothes were more important than mine."
He went for the closet in the far wall and slid the door open. I think he was going to throw her clothes out beside the rug and bedding, but when he got the door open, he froze in front of it.
"Oh, God,"
he said. I came to his side, wondering if he'd found Cardinal asleep in the closet. Maybe she'd just hidden to see what he'd do. I'd known humans who did stuff like that, so why not vampires? But when I could look into the closet, there was no body in it. But there weren't many clothes either. I realized her clothes were missing.
"She's really gone," he said.
And the anger was replaced by sorrow, loss, remorse maybe. All those emotions that hit you after a breakup, especially right after a breakup. Though I guess this was in the middle of it.
"I'm sorry, Damien,"
Nathaniel echoed me.
"We're both sorry, Damien."
"So am I. But I really do hate what she's done to my room, my space. It's like it's all about her, and I didn't matter."
"You mattered to her, Damien."
"Would either of you have let anyone turn your bedroom into some flowered nightmare?"
He looked at me when he asked, and his expression let me know that lying wasn't an option. "No, I wouldn't have."
"When I was younger, I would have, but not now," Nathaniel said.
"So why did I let Cardinal do it?"
"I don't know."
"I don't either,"
he said, still staring into the nearly empty closet. "Where are the rest of your clothes?" I asked.
"In a room further into the underground. I had to get dressed for work in a storage area, because she needed room for her things."
He touched the empty hangers.
"We'll go wash up in our room. Give you some privacy."
"Don't, Anita."
"Don't what?"
"Don't go. Please don't go. It's daylight and I'm awake, and I'm afraid to sleep again. I'm covered in my own blood, and I'm afraid of what's happening to me. Even if Cardinal were here, she couldn't help me. That's why I went to you and Jean-Claude, because something is wrong with me, and if we don't figure out what it is soon, I'm afraid of what will happen."
Nathaniel hugged him first, but I came and added my arms to his.
"I know you're afraid you'll lose control like you did before, but that time was my fault. I'll never cut you off from me metaphysically again, I promise."
"We're both here," Nathaniel said.
He grabbed our arms a little more forcibly than I'd touched him.
"Last time I slaughtered innocent people. I don't remember doing it, but I remember being covered in blood like this, and I remember trying to kill people who were my friends. And now I'm covered in blood again, and I don't know why."
"It will be all right, Damien," I said.
"You can't know that. Whatever this is, it's getting worse, Anita. I sweated enough blood to soak the bed. I've never heard of a vampire doing that."
He shook me a little with his hands gripping us too tight. I put my hands on his arms, partially just to touch him, and partially to try for some control. "We have a lot of old vampires with us now, Damien. One of them may know something." Bobby Lee said,
"Kazim's not a vamp,
but he's been with the vampires for centuries.
We both looked from Bobby Lee to Kazim, where he stood quietly near the door. Damien let go of us enough for me to turn toward the other man. How about it, Kazim? Have you ever heard of a vampire sweating this much blood?
From a nightmare? No.
But from something else, yes? I asked. I think he smiled again, but it was hard to tell with him in the shadows. He'd picked the perfect place to stand to be as invisible as possible. He'd had centuries of practice.
Yes.
Tell us, Damien said.
I do not answer to the servant of my queen.
Damien frowned, and I felt his anger run through us both, and then he went cold, still, the emotion not so much shoved down but gone. I was never sure how he did that, but I knew why he did it. She who made him had used all emotions against people, so to survive, he had learned to hide them under an icy calm that he'd shared with me. Sometimes I thought it was his calm that had helped me as much as therapy.
How about your queen's pet? Will you answer it for me? Nathaniel said.
Kazim smiled just a little.
If that were all you were, then no, I would not answer you.
Then answer to your queen, I said, but my voice showed some of my displeasure that he'd slighted the others. I wasn't as good at hiding my emotions. He gave a small bow and said,
As my queen commands.
But that was all he said. You're going to make me drag it out of you, aren't you?
I will answer any direct question you ask, my queen.
I can't say it's Anita when we're working out in the gym and you just answer as a friend? I couldn't quite read his expression from the shadows. I just knew it was one I hadn't seen before.
You would call me friend?
I know we don't go drinking together or see the same movies, but yes.
We are not friends, Anita. Not in that way.
I nodded. Okay, then we're work friends. He seemed to think about that for a minute, then said,
I know this term. It implies we are friends at work, but how can we be friends if I am your bodyguard?
I'm friends with a lot of my guards, I said. He smiled wide enough that I saw the flash of it even in the shadows.
I do not think we will ever be that friendly.
I laughed with him. I don't mean that kind of friendly. I mean more like I am with Claudia, or Bobby Lee, or Fredo, or Lissandro, or Pepita, Pepe. He nodded again.
Work, friends.
He said it softly. Yeah.
As a queen, I would have made you hunt and ask the right questions. It is what my master told me to do if you asked certain things.
Why would Billy tell you to withhold things from me? Billy was short for Bill Keys, though she'd informed me that sometimes she went by Queenie. I liked Billy better.
My master's reasons are her own.
Which probably meant he couldn't or wouldn't tell me her reasons. Fine, I moved on. But if we are friends, then will you just help me help Damien? He nodded.
It is a long time since someone has asked me something in the name of friendship, Anita. A very long time.
I'm sorry for that.
Why are you sorry?
Because everyone should have friends. He smiled again, but I couldn't see his eyes at all, so I didn't know if it was a happy smile or a hiding smile.
The Harlequin do not have friends, Anita. The animals of the Harlequin have even less than that.
I've done my best to eradicate the double standard that the old vamps feel toward their animals to call.
You and Jean-Claude have done much to help us.
Damien kept my hand in his, but he took a step toward the other man.
Help me, Kazim. Help me because Anita is your friend or your queen. You are a servant. I do not answer to servants.
Kazim, what is it with you and so many of the Harlequin? All of you seem to dislike Damien. Why?
I can answer that one, Bobby Lee said.
Then answer it, I said.
All the Harlequin are old vampires. That means they think that human servants are lesser beings, but Damien is a reminder that to you, they are the servants. They don't like that much.
Okay, I get that. But why do Kazim and the other shapeshifters have an issue?
They all treat any Harlequin human servant as a lesser being, because very few of them were ever good enough to fight at the skill level that the vampires and shapeshifters of the Harlequin did.
I've noticed that almost none of the Harlequin vamps have human servants.
Humans are too fragile for our world,
Kazim said. The world of the Harlequin, you mean? I asked.
Yes.
Damien is a vampire servant, so the animals to call of the Harlequin have one vampire they can feel superior to,
Bobby Lee said. That makes sense, I guess.
Feels superior to me then,
Damien said. But if you know anything that can explain what is happening to me, please share it.
Kazim stepped out of the shadows enough so I could see the puzzlement on his face.
Doesn't it bother you that I think of you as less because Anita has forced you to be her servant?
No.
Because you do not care about my opinion.
Kazim sounded angry now. The first thread of his beast breathed through the room as if someone had opened a hot oven for a second.
You are Harlequin. That means that you are a better warrior than I will ever be. That alone gives you reason to feel superior to me, but the vampire who made me tortured any pride out of me centuries ago. She made of me an empty vessel to fill as she saw fit. Empty vessels do not have pride, so I have no pride to be injured.
We know of your creator.
I always hoped that she who made me would finally do something so awful that the vampire council would send the Harlequin to slay her.
If we had been sent to kill your master, we would not have left any vampires so old as you alive.
Either way, I would have been free of her.
You would have embraced death to be free of your master?
Oh, yes.
Suicide would have freed you too.
But it might have denied me entrance to Valhalla. Death at the hands of the Harlequin would have been a glorious death.
Do you still believe in your Valhalla? After all these centuries?
Kazim asked.
Yes, I do.
Most of us lose our faith under the power of the vampires.
It was one thing she could not take from me.
Kazim studied him, emotions playing over his dark face like cloud shadows on a windy day, too fast for me to understand, but it was more emotion than I'd ever seen him display.
If she left you your faith, then it was only because she could not understand it enough to tear it away from you.
Yes, most likely.
You are lucky that your master did not understand faith.
I am.
I was sent to spy on her once, your mistress. She was a terrible thing.
Did you see me?
Yes.
I did her bidding.
I saw.
I will not ask what you saw me do on her orders. Because I do not want Anita to know the worst of me.
You are her servant. She knows all your secrets.
No, she leaves me space and privacy.
Kazim looked surprised.
Why would she do that?
I don't want Damien to know all my secrets either. I don't want anyone that far inside my head.
That is very you,
Kazim said. Yeah, it is. What do you know about what's happening to Damien?
Nothing,
he said. Bobby Lee said, What do you know about a vampire with symptoms like Damien has? Kazim smiled and nodded respect at the other guard.
Well worded, my friend.
I've been in your part of the world a lot.
It has been centuries since we have seen such symptoms.
Symptoms of what? I asked.
Of having angered the mother of all darkness.
I don't understand.
Did the mother ever visit your dreams, Anita?
He asked. I nodded. Yeah.
Did you ever wake up in a cold sweat from it?
I tried to think back when Marmee Noir was trying to take me over. I don't think so, but I'm not sure. I wasn't paying attention to how much I was sweating after she'd just been in my dreams.
I understand,
Kazim said. Wait. Are you implying that the mother of all darkness is behind Damien's issues?
The last time I saw such symptoms, it was her.
I shook my head. She's dead.
She's a vampire, Anita. She started out dead.
I shook my head harder. No, she is dead, completely, utterly, really, truly dead this time.
How do you kill something that is only spirit, Anita?
I know that the Harlequin that witnessed her death were in contact with others. The Harlequins say they were witness to her death. Kazim nodded.
Indeed, some of us were.
Then answer your own question, I said.
You absorbed her through the very skin of your body.
Yeah. Creepy as fuck, but yeah.
How did it feel to devour the night, Anita? For she was that, the night made alive and real. How could one small human, even a necromancer, consume the night itself?
I learned how to take someone's energy from another vampire.
Yes, Obsidian Butterfly, the master of Albuquerque, New Mexico.
If you know all the answers, why are you asking the questions?
I know what happened, but that is bare facts, and this was so much more than just facts.
I don't even know what that means, Kazim.
You ate the living darkness, Anita. It has given your own necromancy a power jump of near legendary proportions. You raised every cemetery and lone body in and around the city of Boulder, Colorado last year, while you chased down the spirit of the Lover of Death, one of the last members of the now disbanded Vampire Council who did not bend knee to Jean-Claude's rebellion.
You say rebellion. I say killing crazy motherfuckers to save the world from their plans to spread vampirism and contagious zombie plague across the planet.
It would have been an apocalypse for the human race.
But not the apocalypse.
You mean the biblical one?
He asked. Yeah, as in the apocalypse.
You say that as if there is only one.
There is only one.
You have prevented two on your own. We have prevented more events that would have destroyed the planet, or at least the human population. Some of us lived through the last great extinction and the coming of the great winter.
You mean the Ice Age, as in the real Ice Age? He nodded. I took in a deep breath, let it out slow, and said, Okay, some of you guys are old as fuck. Make your point.
My point, Anita, is that apocalypse, as in the great devastation or second coming of some religious significance, has happened before and will likely happen again.
I'm not sure we're defining it the same way, I said.
Perhaps not. But there really does need to be a plural for apocalypse.
Fine. You've made your point. Now tie all that back to what's happening with Damien.
You are so impatient for someone who will likely live to see centuries.
It's not certain that I'm immortal, Kazim. And besides, I've killed more supposedly immortal beings than anyone else I know. So who will live forever is really up for debate.
Fair enough,
he said.
But you absorbed the mother of all darkness without having any idea how to control that much power.
It's like eating steak. My body uses the energy of the food I eat automatically. I don't need to tell it to make bone or more red blood vessels, it just does it.
And whoever said that metaphysical food was the same as physical food, Anita?
I stared at him, trying to reason my way through what he'd said. I'm not sure I understand.
He's saying that eating magic isn't the same as eating steak, Damien said.
I looked up at him, squeezing his hand. Okay, maybe I'm being really slow, but I still don't get it.
Did you really think you could consume the mother of all darkness, the one who created vampire kind, who gave us our civilization, our rules, our laws, and it would have no effect on you?
She was trying to do worse than kill me, Kazim. She was trying to take over my body and use it for her house. Car, whatever. She'd even tried to get me pregnant so she could transfer her spirit to my unborn baby in case she couldn't take me. I had no choice but to kill her the only way I could. You said it. She was just spirit, untouchable, uncontainable. So I destroyed her the only way I could.
By eating her, he said.
Yeah, sort of.
You gained a great deal of power, and Jean-Claude has used it well.
Yeah, he has.
But you were the power that consumed her, Anita, not Jean-Claude. You were the one who put your flesh against the body she was using and drank down the darkness between the stars.
I remembered the moment of it, and how I'd thought the same thing, a darkness that had existed before the light found it and would exist after the last star had burned out. And the darkness took everything again. But I'd won. I'd defeated her. I'd saved myself and stopped all the evil she had planned for the rest of humanity, the rest of the vampires, and the shapeshifters. She'd been an equal opportunity villain. She'd planned to take over all of us and make us her slaves, or puppets, or just to die at her whim. Nathaniel hugged me from behind, drawing me in against his body. He'd been tied to me metaphysically when I'd consumed the Mother of All Darkness. Part of what had helped me defeat her was my love and craving for him, and Jean-Claude, and all the men I loved. The Mother of All Darkness hadn't understood love.
"Say what you are thinking, Anita," Kazim said.
There was a moment when I thought, I can't swallow the darkness because